Can you kind of give us some insight into who you are and how you got into Crude Carnivore?
I started working at a natural pet supply store back in 2015. And so I learned so much about products and just started doing so much research and just really expanded my knowledge.
When you go in and get your master's in animal nutrition, what are you learning?
At that time, there was still not as much about fresh feeding as there is now.
It's crazy to hear about nutrition in an academic sense, like a master's of nutrition.
Right.
The only people we've talked to that have had higher education in this space were our vets, really. And like, they're like, we had a semester, we had none.
Most pet parents still today feed dry food. There's times, like even right now for me, budget-wise, I had to introduce a dry food. Like, I can't do it. I can't, you know, spend $700 a month on feeding raw. And like, I love it. But of course, if you can, ultimately use bone broth, because bone broth is so incredible for the immune system and it works really fast. It works within 7 to 14 days.
Wow. So you can start seeing results pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So to our audience that might not know you, I mean, we've started sharing about your bone broth a lot. Can you kind of give us some insight into who you are and how you got into Crude Carnivore?
I started working at a natural pet supply store back in 2015, which was kind of like interesting because that wasn't really my plan at all. I started my master's degree in companion animal nutrition back in 2015. And 2 months into that, I found this natural pet supply store. And I actually wanted to go into like rehabilitation,
What was your undergrad in?
Animal production, which is hilarious knowing what I know now. And like
And what
science.
is animal production? Like farming?
Yeah, you literally learn about like how animals are raised and like how they're raised, how they live,
How to like mass produce them?
Yes. And so it's just hilarious because I never thought at that time that I would then be into like small batch, locally sourcing, you know, things for my broth, which
Right.
I'll probably get into that again. But yeah, so I did my undergrad at SIU, Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. And then I really wanted to go into rehabilitation. So I was like, I'll just get a master's degree, get a like high paying job.
And rehabilitation, like in a vet office?
Like, there was like a sanctuary in Florida that I really wanted to work at, and they like work with horses and dogs, and it's like laser therapy, massage therapy, like aqua therapy, like all these
Ooh.
different things. And I, of course, at that time didn't think like nutrition had anything to do with any of that, which is
Right.
hilarious. So then I was like, I'll just get like a good paying job. And at the time I was like, maybe I can just work with like, you know, bigger brands and try to like make decent money and then get my certifications. But I started working at this natural pet supply store like 2 months into my degree, in my master's degree. And yeah, I just was like, whoa, there's a lot of information to learn. And so I was there for, oh my gosh, 7 years. And I
Wow.
managed the store, but what I primarily was focused on was like doing nutrition consultations with pet parents and helping them find better options for their dogs and cats, mostly dogs. And so I learned so much about products and just started doing so much research and just really expanded my knowledge. And then I knew that I really wanted to be more independent. Like, I knew that I was always going to own a business of some sort. That's something that I've always known. And I really wanted to make a raw food because at the time there wasn't really that many out there that were like limited, like really minimally processed, had like super like powerful ingredients. It just wasn't really a thing at the time, but that was such a mountain, and I was like, there's just no way.
I mean, to think about finding a
Oh
manufacturer
my
and
gosh.
sourcing and all
Yeah.
the different steps.
It was just not something that I was going to be able to do. Like, so I was actually on a cruise with my family, and I was talking to my older brother, and I was like, okay, this is what I want to do, but I think it's just too big. So how can we start? And that's where like the bone broth idea was born. And so I literally got home the next week and I immediately went to a local butcher shop and picked up like soup bones, went home, threw it in a crock pot. And I did think quite a bit about like how I wanted to be different, because something that I find is that there are multiple products out there, but how can you be different? And something that didn't exist at the time was really infusing a product with herbs. And I wanted it to be a product that, first of all, did not have excess sugar and it wasn't made with additional, like, carbs, because dogs mostly already eat dry food. So I was like, but infusing it with herbs would be, like, a complete game changer. It doesn't exist. So that's what I did. I ended up sourcing 3 different herbs, and it was parsley, dandelion, and thyme. And those are, like, our normal herbs that we use on a regular basis.
Why'd you pick those ones?
So dandelion is, like, I like to call it nature's antihistamine. Actually helps break down histamines in the liver. It's also a really good detoxer for the liver. So just really flushing toxins out of the body. We use thyme, which is like a natural natural diuretic. So it can really help move fluids out of the body and get those toxins out. And then parsley is a great blood detoxer. So
with our pets,
yeah, with our pets being so exposed to toxins every single day in our home, in the yard, like just the roads and the air quality and everything, there was a need for something that can, like, enhance the already beneficial properties of bone broth. So it was kind of like a good combination. And so now, like, we have 6 broths and they all have those 3 herbs. And then 1 is a mushroom broth that doesn't have, it has thyme and parsley, but I wanted to kind of structure it a little bit differently. But yeah, so that's how I got into the broth thing. And it just kind of, working at that store helped a ton. It was a great launching pad because it's so many connections. Mm-hmm. And they really helped. I had so many customers that were already, working there shopping there, and they were super excited about it. So they were, like, motivated to try it. And then the other thing that I really wanted was a shelf stable broth, because the freezer section is really hard to compete for, especially today. So that was, 4 years ago, but nowadays even more so.
Right.
And people really like the idea of just a carry product, like carry and feed. And we use, like, the amber glass bottles, which you can also really nicely repurpose. So, so then a couple months later, I was like, it took me, like, about 6 months to really get it from start to shelf. And I was thinking about the name, and it just kind of came to me while I was driving one day. And
that's why did you pick crude? Carnivore.
So I was, like, really going back and forth, and I was, like, going around with 5 million things, and I just tried to think, like, I like same letter words because they just sound good together. And so I was driving around and I was like, what is on every single, like, pet product, every single packaging that you find, that you turn around, and the word crude was on all of them. And the word crude means in its raw natural form.
And that's so good.
Crude carnivore.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a no-brainer.
So yeah, it just kind of stuck, and it didn't really go away. So it stuck, and now I questioned it multiple times, but I just feel like it's very unique and different. And that's how Crude was born, and keeps on trucking.
So tell us more about your master's degree, because I'm curious, like, when you go in and get your master's in animal nutrition, what are you learning? Are you learning that fresh foods are what they should be eating, or what's that like?
It's actually, so it has shifted a lot now. And I actually talked to my professor, like, a couple months ago, and talked to him, because he actually teaches a companion animal nutrition course that you get, like, certified in at SIU. And I actually saw people on Facebook, like, talking about that one, which was so funny, because I was like, hey, I went to that school. But what we learned is actually much more in depth. There are actually conversations that you, like, never really have with a client, because it's so in depth. Like, it just gets nitty gritty of,
it's like heavy terminology and stuff.
And so it was really beneficial, though, to learn the needs of dogs and how the body responds to certain things and, like, nutrients. And so from there, you could really kind of make the connection to, okay, we really don't want to feed an excessive or at all feed any carbohydrates. Like, you really want to focus on your proteins and fats. And so it was really just more in depth, and a lot of the rest of the things that I've learned that I know came just from me reading a lot of books.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, at that time, there was still not as much about fresh feeding as there is now. And that time it was where we were just kind of seeing that we didn't want to feed the, like, corn and soy products. And we were shifting into more, like, feeding potato based products, like legume based products. That was kind of where the shift was happening while I was in school. So I kind of learned through that entire process. And then working at that store, then I, of course, really opened up the window of feeding fresh and just kind of learning also, like, in person what's working for pet parents and what's not. So the master's degree was 2 years. And one thing that I did learn, it was very heavily, like, statistical and very heavily in the lab. I was in the lab, like, almost every day. And I have I wrote my thesis, and it was the efficacy of omega-3 fatty acids. The efficacy of antioxidants in protecting omega-3 fatty acids in dog food. So that was kind of really cool. We just,
what does that mean?
So pretty much most, like, general basic dog foods are, preserved with, BHA, BHT, and those are actually, preservatives that are banned in Europe. Which is just kind of wild, but they're often found. They're even found in, like, you know, like the pepperonis you can buy that you can put, like, on your pizza.
Oh, I think that happened to us recently.
Oh, yeah.
They're even in that. And they're actually, I mean, they've been linked to cancer. They've been linked to, like, being carcinogenic. And so most dog foods that are on the cheaper end contain those, as well as food dyes and things like that. So we were trying to find an alternative antioxidant or preservative. And so we actually used natural antioxidants. We used, like, turmeric. We used grapeseed extract, pomegranate seed. We used, gosh, it's been a long time. We just used different naturally occurring extracts and just foods to try to see what the benefit was. And we actually found that, and we did use, like, BHA as a control. And we actually found that, like, turmeric and grapeseed extract were even more effective in preserving the fats that were naturally occurring in the food. So, and omega-3 fatty acids are extremely fragile. That's the one thing that when you feed a dry food, you are not going to get anything of, because they are destroyed during heat processing. They're double bonds. So they are going to break immediately, like, with any heat exposure. And so they really need to be protected. So when you feed a dry food, this is, like, something I always recommend, especially is from puppy age all the way through senior. You always want to supplement with an omega-3 fatty acid, just because there is none, especially if you feed a dry food or if you do not feed fish. Dogs need that for eye health, brain health, skin cells. Like, they're everywhere in the body and needed for so many things. And so
I think that's important. That's, like, basically the number one supplement that most of our podcast guests have recommended. Veterinarians, nutritionists, is an omega-3 supplement, because it's...
And not just, like, anything. Like, you want to avoid... A lot of times people think, like, oh, I can feed, like, olive oil, or, but that's not completely different. Those are typically going to be richer in omega-6s. Mm-hmm. And also, if you, there's always a rate limiting step, as we call it in science. So in the process of breaking down the fats to get to the two main omega-3s, which are EPA and DHA, that's going to be the most usable form of the body. There's certain steps to get to that point to break down those oils and those fats. And when you use a plant-based oil for a pet or for a dog, there's a rate limiting step, which means that step is extremely difficult and takes a ton of energy. So you're actually not getting as much out. So the smaller, the ideally always an animal based oil, ideally fish, ideally small, tiny fish.
And so basically you're saying no chia seeds, the flax seeds and stuff, because those have omega-3s, but those are more plant-based, easily absorbable for humans rather than dogs.
Yeah, definitely. Dogs have a really hard time with that. I mean, they're great. Like, I love chia seeds as a fiber source. It's, like, my favorite thing. But for, like, fatty acid, EPA, DHA, I always recommend small fish. And then I ideally also molecularly distilled, just to eliminate the metal load out of the oil also.
Yeah, what's that?
It's pretty much just a heating process that eliminates that metal buildup out of the oil.
It's crazy to hear about nutrition in an academic sense, like a master's of nutrition.
Right.
Obviously, like, the entire thing is about nutrition. But the only people we've talked to that have had higher education in this space were our vets, really. Mm-hmm. And, like, they're like, we had a semester. We had none. Yeah. I don't really remember. And all of it was, like, kibble, 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 big kibble. But here you're testing different, like, preservation methods.
Yeah.
That's really crazy to hear about. Like,
yeah, it's definitely different. Statistics was, like, horrible.
Yeah. I took statistics. That was one of the worst courses.
That was definitely one of the ones that we like all cheated because it's brutal. Like so brutal. I don't know if I'll ever use it again. But yeah, I have it like bound. Like I have my study bound at home.
Really?
Yes, it's hilarious.
So why bone broth? So why a pet parent's listening to this, they've never tried it before, why would they want to give their dog bone broth?
So it's like an ancient remedy for gut healing. So if you have like, if you're sick, if you have an upset stomach, like bone broth has been around forever. And I just feel that most pet parents still today feed dry food, which is not to say like, you know, that's horrible or, you know, to shame anybody because I'm much like a really big like... How do you say?
Advocate
for like, do what you can in the season that you're in. Like I would, you know, I just think that there's times like even right now for me, budget wise, I had to introduce a dry food.
Yep.
Like I can't do it. I can't, you know, spend $700 a month on feeding raw. And like, I love it, but we have to make cuts. And so the best thing in my opinion was I saw the difference when pet parents even just added water to the bowl. So I always even say, like, if you can't afford the broth, if you can't do goat milk, if you can't do anything that hydrates, always add water to the bowl because it just makes such a big difference. But of course, if you can, ultimately use bone broth because bone broth is so incredible for the immune system. It really helps in so many ways. It's loaded with collagen. It has amazing amino acids that have different functions in the body, but they almost are like full body encompassing of how they can help. And so with our dogs also being exposed to different things in the environment and the toxins that we talked about, you really need to make sure that that gut is solid. And I often like to look at the gut as like a cheesecloth. So most pets nowadays have leaky gut just from exposure to mostly eating dry food. It's really damaging on the body with just the dry food all the time. So I always like use my hands as an example, but like a cheesecloth is like together like this, like that's how the gut is supposed to be. But when you have a cheesecloth and it gets like worn down, it'll end up starting to like open up like this. And the gut lining is designed to just let like tiny little particles push through the gut lining. But when that opens up, it's allowing much larger particles that haven't even been digested to pass through. And that causes major inflammation in the body. And so that's when you're then seeing like the hot spots and the skin dryness and the irritation.
And I would imagine like a nutrient deficiency too, because those molecules aren't getting broken down so that they can absorb the nutrients within them.
Yeah. And it's really just like wreaking havoc on the body. And so what we want to try to do is like plug those back up. And bone broth has like the gelatin form. When you cook bone broth, the like jelly form of collagen is released, which is gelatin, and that's what will like go through the gut and like fill all those holes back up.
Interesting.
So it's just really incredible. And then it's also just really helping, like there's four different amino acids or protein building blocks that make up collagen, and one of them is glycine. And glycine is like so important. It's like probably my favorite part of collagen because it actually helps in the production of glutathione, and glutathione is the body's like most powerful antioxidant, and that depletes over time. Mm-hmm. So we need to continuously try to reproduce that and try to make that to keep the body strong and fighting against, or like keeping the immune system strong and fighting against any like invaders or any viruses. So there's definitely a lot of benefits to it, and there's different types of collagen, and different broths do different things and have different types of collagen. But in general, the collagen and in bone broth, like that makes up broth, is just what's so powerful at like, you know, really healing. And that's, I think it's just so important. It's like the one thing you can get that has so much potential in the body to make a difference. And it works really fast. It works within 7 to 14 days.
Wow. So you can start seeing results pretty quickly.
Yeah. Typically, yeah, 7 to 14 days. And that's sometimes what happens. Like people will, when I used to do a lot of market events, people would just like buy a bottle and then I would like hear back like, oh, well, it didn't work. And I'm like, well, you have like a 75-pound dog and one bottle lasts you 4 days.
Yeah.
So you're not even getting into that where you're really pushing through the entire digestive tract to really, you know, make a difference. But the nutrients are really powerful in it. And, but that's not any broth. You know what I mean?
Like yeah.
It has to be.
All this is all about sourcing and
yes,
how it's made.
There's definitely things that will make it more powerful and more healing, like the grocery store brand broth. that is like mass produced and like cooked at like 450 degrees and like,
made from conventionally raised animals.
Yeah, is not gonna have the same effect as a broth that is sourced with intention, with, you know, from grass fed pasteurized animals, with, you know, pesticide, herbicide free produce. Like, there's a lot of things that play into it to make sure that you get a broth that is actually going to do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
So what else do you like to add to the bowl other than the bone broth?
I have one dog, Hurley. She's like my heart dog. She has arthritis. So she gets, you know, different types of things. So she gets a type 2 collagen supplement every single day to really help her kind of keep that. Those ligaments and tendons intact, and to really promote the squishiness between in the joints. So type 2 collagen is actually found primarily in chicken and turkey broth, and it's what is the like cushiony part of the joint, and it surrounds typically like the bone to make sure it moves properly. So I give her that in like a concentrated supplement, just because I feel like I couldn't give her enough broth to really like help her with that inflammation in her bones. So she gets that, and she's also 12, so she's getting a senior supplement also, which is just made up of various herbs, and she gets broth every single meal, of course. And then depending on the day, like some of my dogs, like if there's ever loose stool or anything like that, then I like to use Saccharomyces boulardii, because it's like my favorite probiotic, and it actually can function as like an antibiotic almost. But it's like my favorite thing to use when my dog has diarrhea, because it like just like fixes it, I feel like.
That's an interesting topic. So your dog gets diarrhea, and I'm really interested because you're an animal nutritionist. What is your protocol?
First of all, stay calm. It's fine. It's normal. Like, we all get it.
Some more often than others.
Some more often than others. Same with our dogs. Like, I never panic. Like, my dogs sometimes get into stuff, and you know, I always like to say, like, if it really goes on for longer than like 7 to 10 days, that's when I would be like, something's probably off. But it happens frequently. Like, dogs get stressed, they get nervous, it's just gonna happen. And so I typically always like to keep some type of pumpkin on hand. If you want to buy like fresh pumpkin, I typically recommend like you can honestly go into like the kids section at the grocery store and find like pureed pumpkin, ideally organic, that doesn't contain anything else. Sweet potatoes are good too. You can honestly take whole sweet potatoes if you want to and break those down, or like cook them down and mash them up. And that's a good fiber source. Honestly, best fiber source though, chia seeds.
Yeah, that's crazy. So I've only really heard about chia seeds for the omega-3s, which obviously we talked about, and that's not very effective, but chia seeds can be a fiber source too.
This may not be right, but I'm pretty sure it is right, and you can fact check me here, but 300 milligrams of like fiber in a teaspoon of chia seeds.
Wow.
Like, so if you ever were to put like a teaspoon of chia seeds in like water, It sucks it up. So when you have diarrhea, you have excess water, like there's a lack of balance in the gut. So you put enter those chia seeds, and they will like swell up with the water.
Wow, that's so interesting.
And the other thing that people typically will do is like go the opposite direction. They will be like, no water, my dog has too much fluid in their gut, but that's actually not the right direction to go, because your dog is losing so much water through having diarrhea.
Right.
You need to hydrate. So that's when the bone broth comes in, because first of all, you're reducing inflammation in the gut, which is extremely important and can also be really uncomfortable. But you're also rehydrating and offering electrolytes back to the body.
And with bone broth, like I'm sure a lot of people listening to this have experienced this. You can't force a dog to drink water. If they don't want to drink, they're not going to drink. But if you give them bone broth, something that's actually tasty, they'll get more hydration in.
And honestly, if your dog gets into something, like I would recommend, this is so hard for me. I'm like, have such a hard time, especially if one dog has diarrhea and everybody else is fine. Like, not feeding them.
Yeah, I know. I've heard that. Same with, like, throwing up, right? Yeah. Like, kind of fasting them.
Giving them a little bit of a break. And so what you can still do, though, to make them feel like they're getting something is just give them broth and, like, just let them lap up some broth to kind of give some soothing benefits and make them feel like they're getting something. I'm really, really bad at that.
I know. I always feel bad not feeding them.
Honestly, most of the time, even if they don't feel good, like, they always want to eat.
Yeah.
You know, some dogs are super picky and some dogs don't. I guess one of my dogs, he's like a little Shih Tzu mix. He doesn't really, he gets kind of grouchy sometimes. But yeah, other than that, I mean, I think really reaching to like, you know, healing foods and good probiotics and just keeping pumpkin on hand or something like that. I think like, you know, Native Pet has a powdered pumpkin. Like there's Rogue Pet Science has like a powdered pumpkin. There's a lot of different products you can find.
Right.
But honestly, going to the grocery store and just finding like a, even worst case, like a canned pumpkin. I'm not a big fan of cans. Or if you can get it in a Tetra Pak, something that you can just have on hand. What I find with those, what's hard is that you will just throw it away. Like you won't use the whole can, especially if you have smaller dogs.
Right.
Or little dogs, it just won't work. One thing I always recommend that you don't do in a situation like this, which is often recommended, is to switch the diet.
To like chicken and rice?
Chicken and rice. Never. That makes no sense. Like, especially if you are a like home cooked food kind of person or a raw feeder, even with their regular dry food, like I would not recommend completely switching your dog to something else, especially if they're not used to it. Because if your dog is not used to the continuous switching of foods, you're just going to make it worse.
Yeah.
He's not prepared to break down all those nutrients. There's not going to be that, you know, influx of bacteria that are going to like thrive on that food that's coming in. You're not going to have the digestive enzymes active to actually break that down. And rice especially is such an inflammatory food. It's actually extreme. Same for us humans even. Like rice is not necessarily something that you can really digest that well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I would definitely say I would not recommend.
I mean, especially from like a kibble to chicken and rice.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You're changing the whole processing method of the food you're feeding.
And also, can I just say this? I think it's hilarious that when the body is in stress, that that's the time that like someone would recommend feeding fresh food.
It's almost like vaccinating a sick dog.
Yeah. But also like, why is fresh food the answer to heal, but not?
Whoa.
You know what I'm saying?
That's fucking crazy. Yeah.
Like, why is that? If that's what heals in the moment that you think you recommend to your patient, okay, your dog is sick, so feed real food. But then when they're not sick anymore, go back to the food that is causing the inflammation.
Wow. That's nuts. Right? Yeah, that makes...
I thought that. I'm like, this makes no sense.
No, it really doesn't.
So why are we recommending, like, this high-processed stuff? But then in a situation where the dog is actually sick, we are recommending real food.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so... another interesting topic. Last night, I watched Mark Cuban invest 550,000 dollars for 10% of a vegan dog food company. I've since looked this company up, and they now make vegan dog food, but they also make chicken-based and beef-based foods, but the meat is grown in a lab.
Hmm.
So, first question. Thoughts on vegan dog food.
So here's actually something crazy, okay? There is a lady, I have no idea what her name is, I have no idea, but I heard about this like a few years ago. So she actually fed her dog a vegan diet. However, she literally spent every day analyzing her soil that the food that she was making for her dog was grown in to make sure that her dog had a balanced meal.
Interesting.
So she literally went all out to like balance her dog's diet to make sure all the nutrients are hit.
Yeah.
Who does that?
That's insane.
That is not a thing. So to me, it's just like, oh, I can understand how if you're a vegan, like it would be, you know, it would be hard. Like I understand that because I literally take bones from animals and I love animals and it's so important to me how they live and how they're raised and that they're treated humanely and that they have a good life. It's so important to me. And I, you know, put lamb bones in a pot and it makes me just want to cry. Like, I understand that that would be the approach. Like, you know, this makes me really sad, but it's a dog. It's a carnivore. We have to honor that.
It's crude carnivore.
We have to honor what they need. And so
you wouldn't like, I mean, there's different ways you can grow plants, obviously, but like food, you wouldn't want to like take it out of soil and put it in some, like that's its nutrient source, you know? Like, I guess you can do hydroponic, but I'm just thinking like you wouldn't put carrots in like plastic, like ripped up plastic or anything. Like,
what do you mean?
Like, then I'm thinking like mushrooms, for example, like you want them to grow on what is biologically appropriate.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like their food is biologically appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All the species appropriate food.
Like, I get what you're saying.
But like, then I was
every
like,
single thing that grows.
I do grow plants in rocks. I do grow plants in water. Like, I do grow plants.
But that's a natural thing in nature still. Like, there are many plants that don't necessarily grow in a, you know, in just soil.
Yeah.
Like our plants, they literally grow like on your coffee table.
Yeah.
That's insane. So it seems like with vegan dog food, it's kind of like, my opinion has always been, you can balance it. You can formulate a dog food that doesn't use meat to hit all the nutrient levels according to the NRC or AFCO or whoever. But we don't really know the long-term effects of feeding a traditional carnivore, albeit, you know, they can eat some plant matter, but we don't know the long-term effects of that.
Yeah, and I will tell you that most of the time they're going to be really rich in carbohydrates.
Yep. They have to be, don't they?
Which is not, they have no nutrient requirement for carbs, so...
I mean, even AFCO admits that.
Yeah. So to me, it's just like, if you look at like vegan meat in the grocery store, for us even, it's made from starches.
Yeah.
Like, we're going for the taste, which I can understand. You know, you care about the life of the animals. Like, I understand all of that. But I think that there's a big thing to say about people who go out and source from local farms, who support local farms. You know, you're supporting a family with that too. And that's what we primarily do, is like, we work really closely with some of our farms. You know, one guy has 4 kids and I am supporting him by taking the waste that usually would go in the trash that he doesn't make money on, by him selling them to me, and he can support his family that way, you know? So I just think that if we were to shift our mindset to really supporting farms that really care about the life and well-being of the animals and our earth also, by, you know, doing regenerative farming and making
sure
we're rotating pastures and we are really allowing, you know, foraging and the plants to grow and nitrogen to be put back in the earth, then we can really make a big difference. And I feel like that's something to get behind. But when it comes to our dogs, yes, you can try to balance it, but I think you're going to have a really hard time unless you actually reach out into the animal-based world to try to give them what they need, because they're just not, you know, like we talked about the omegas, like we're talking about how difficult it is for the dog to like kind of change over the nutrients from a plant-based source into the usable fats,
and that's like the omega-3s to the EPA DHA.
So, you know, same thing with a vegan diet. If that's primarily what we're doing with plants, you know, dogs typically benefit much more from a veggies being, you know, already blended up where the cellulose is exposed, for them to more easily be able to use it. Now, that's not to say that like chopping up veggies and throwing them in the bowl, no matter what way, I think is beneficial, but ideally for their bodies, they would benefit from a blended up blend of vegetables to be able to use like the micronutrients out of that. But that's also not to say, if you think back, like there's still dogs today that are on dog chow. That food is primarily plant-based.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about,
like,
too.
Think about it, the ingredient list, the first ingredient is going to be like beef meal.
Right.
Which is going to be a dry ingredient going into the food.
Right.
Like, they render that food and make it a powder, so it's already like cooked at such high temperatures. That then goes into the food, and that's in a powdered weight. And then the next ingredient is going to be like corn byproduct or oat hulls or whatever. That's all plant-based.
And can you imagine, like, oh, I'm going to go get a steak tonight. Let me just mix this powder into my water and drink my beef meal. Can you imagine?
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of those, like, really most of the foods and kibbles that we've known for whatever the last, you know, I mean, 140 years are that. They're made from byproducts of, you know, whatever, the wheat production and then corn production, all these different things. And so we're just, you know, we just recently in the last 10 to 20 years came into making foods that have higher meat content. And so really our dogs have always somewhat survived on that, because dogs can really mold themselves to anything. That doesn't mean that they're surviving. They're not thriving. Also, genetics have changed. We are overbreeding. We are inbreeding. We are line breeding. We're doing all these things that are making it really difficult for dogs to survive on just the bare minimum.
Right.
You know, their bodies are so they're struggling already so hard. So us like not feeding them species appropriate, it's making it even harder. So we're seeing shorter and shorter lifespans of dogs because there's so many more issues with so many more toxins. The fragrance aisles and grocery stores and wherever we buy stuff are like, I get a headache every time I walk through there.
Yeah.
People, we use Febreze because that's what's on the TV, you know, with the dog and the ad. And
it says pet safe.
Yes. And you spray it all over. And just like we talked today earlier about your yard, you know, you have somebody come to, you know, I had somebody come spray for spiders just because it had to be done. And they were, I was like, oh, what do you guys use for the yard? Like, is it non-toxic? He's like, oh yeah, it's pet safe. I was like, oh really? I was like, what is it? And he's like, oh, it's like the same stuff as Frontline. I was like, okay, thanks. You know, I'm just like, you know, we are exposing, they're just naturally exposed to so many things just because that's what's normal. And that's what's been recommended for years and years and years. And we're finding really that there's a lot more damage. There's more and more dogs getting cancer. And it's just this exposure to all these things and all these, you know, just inflammation, chronic inflammation in the body all the time.
Right.
And so that all about the vegan dog food. but I just, man, if you get a dog, like that's just, they just deserve, you know, to be fed what's appropriate to them and what they like to eat. And I, you know, I always like to use this comparison, like a dog that's, let's say your dog gets out and runs off. They're not going to go in a cornfield and eat corn.
Right.
On the roadkill on the side of the road. That's just nature.
Yep.
And that's just what I like to tell people.
Yeah.
I always just try to think like, what were their ancestors doing and what are their wild counterparts doing?
Yeah.
I always love what Jay and Adrian say, the two crazy cat ladies, where they say like, if you were all of a sudden given some random bird from another country to kind of figure out how to best care for that bird, you would go and look at what those birds' wild counterparts are doing, you know, and see, okay, what are they eating? What time are they eating? What are they doing like for mental enrichment? And then try to replicate that.
Yeah. It's, and with us, like if you go online, the first thing that you see is like, they should be eating a balanced dry food. Like,
yep.
What? Like, and I mean, just looking at the dog, like their biology from nose to tail, like their entire digestive system is designed for eating meat and tearing meat and breaking meat down. And I like think about this all the time with my dogs. So I just recently put my dogs on a partial carnivore with Viva Raw. That's what I do. Like that's my current like meal plan or whatever. And my dogs would, before, you know, we would go on a walk, they typically poop twice a day. Well, they still poop twice a day, but the volume, like that's alone science enough for me that just introducing a dry food, even the, like, I think one of the best dry foods in the market that is lower heat process, that is not as, you know, that is baked, that has good ingredients. Even that, like, is not utilized by the body because her, like, for example, Hurley, like, she usually, I mean, I can't even compare it in volume. I'm going to weigh it. But just watching her and, like, seeing what comes out of her now compared to, like, 4 weeks ago. No, that's a lie. 3 months ago when we first started this process. It's unreal. So to me, that's just like factual alone to see that the body doesn't utilize it as well as it does the raw food. And I've seen that for 10 years in dogs. And there really needs to be no other evidence to me that a dog is designed, and a cat, they're designed to consume real food, because it's like what goes in is not what comes out.
Yep.
What goes in barely comes out,
right?
Because it's used,
right?
So
I want you to kind of talk about the where we lump dogs, whether they're carnivores or omnivores or somewhere in between, because I think what a lot of people don't realize is when we say carnivore, we're not saying the only way they can thrive is to eat only meat. No. We're not saying they can't have any plant matter, because even wolves have been observed eating berries when food is short, eating the stomach or the stomach contents of prey animals. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, they're like scavenging carnivores. So in the wild, like a dog may go 2 weeks without eating. They have to survive somehow, right? So typically their diet will consist of some berries and some foraging, you know, foods that they can get. Sometimes they will even only chew on a bone for, you know, a little while and then go on with their day for a few weeks. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think that we're just over here throwing muscle meat at our dogs.
Right.
They have different requirements. And yeah, in the wild, they would actually start eating out of the digestive tract first, because that's where a lot of the pre-digested plants are that they do get nutrients from.
And that's why we recommend like cooking them or otherwise pre-digesting them, right?
And I love, in my opinion, the best way that you can actually like get your dog to try more things is to just, when you're cooking in the kitchen, to let them try stuff, like give them some broccoli, fruit, whatever, really. And I mean, it's hilarious because when I first got Hurley, my oldest dog, and even Marvin, they only ate dry food. And she wouldn't eat till 9 p.m. She was just waiting to see what else she would get. And then when I got Marvin, starving Marvin, she had to eat.
Yeah.
She had to eat her food. So that's when she really started. But then when we started feeding more fresh foods, that's when she really became like, she is a food fiend. Like, she's obsessed with food. Every time I'm in the kitchen, she's in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And now she loves it. She wants to try everything. She'll try a banana every single time, but she hates them. She's always like, okay. And she's like,
Pleh. That sounds like Harper.
Spits it out. So, but I think just definitely like letting them try things. And I think people and pet parents have been like burned. And that's not to say like every single veterinarian has done this, but a lot of veterinarians would be like, do not feed table scraps.
Yeah. Don't feed human food.
Yeah. It's super dangerous. Like pancreatitis, all these different things. And it just makes you like freak out and you think, oh my gosh, my dog ate a apple piece. Like, oh my gosh, like what do I do? And no, like they are okay to eat that and they need to, you know, really get those nutrients. And I just think that there's so many things that are in your fridge, in your pantry that you can, you know, share with your dog. And I just think that we're always so scared to try that. But the more you just try it and get going, the more they'll open up about it and really give it a go. But yeah, I definitely think that they do need a good balance of everything, but their like veggie requirement is so small. It's like 6% of the diet. For a while there, it was only like 4%. But now I think I like kind of putting it right at like 6 to 8 and then kind of giving like some nuts and some berries to just really give good nutrients. So they do need a little bit of that and they can survive on that. I think one thing that is really important for pet parents to keep in mind is that it's expensive. Yes, I understand that too. Like typically the higher quality foods are expensive, but you're fueling longevity. You're fueling your dog's life. You know, we all want them to live like 100 years. So, you know, the more we invest in their health from the beginning, like right from puppy age,
right,
starting from the beginning, that's the best time to start to rotate, to add things into the bowl, to, you know, feed whatever you can, to expose them to all these different nutrients and build up their immune system and allow them to be able to digest everything. I just think that's what we should be doing and not, you know, being scared of adding real food.
And like you said earlier, kind of about hiding the foods or like figuring out how to incorporate foods that they might not like, bone broth is a great way to do that. Yes. We blend so much stuff with bone broth if we have to give something we know they're not going to like.
So much for picky dogs, for sure.
Right.
It's like so good. I mean, they love it. And yeah, it's just best nutrients, tasty. It's like a no-brainer.
So what's the future for Crude?
We're kicking. We're like 4.5 years old now. And we are in quite a few retail stores. We definitely want to, you know, try to reach as many bowls as we can. And we definitely have some things up our sleeve. We're working on some other things. And I have like a few ideas that I want to do. But, you know, at this time, we're just kind of like trying to still grow the business. And have people learn more about us and why we're different. And how we can make an impact in their pet's life. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Love that. Well, Flo, thanks for coming on today. It was a pleasure talking with you. And I hope our audience is becoming more interested in bone broth, for sure. Excited. And as always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Bryce.
I'm Kinsey.
And we'll see you in the next episode.